How good has the Women's Six Nations been so far? With tons of tries, gripping games, and some of the world's best players coming to the fore, it has certainly had fans across Europe hooked. And, as promised, we're back with the second episode of our series dedicated to the tournament in conjunction with the 52 blog and K2. In this episode, I speak to Ireland front row star Leah Lyons. She may only be 24, but already the Harlequins player is making serious waves on the international scene as a fantastic ball carrier, highly reliable defender, and very versatile individual, capable of playing at both prop and hooker. Leah also hit the headlines for a different reason this time last year, as she posted a classy message on Twitter hitting back at someone who had body-shamed her during a Six Nations win over Wales. Her response attracted widespread positivity and really brought to attention an issue that is not discussed enough in both sport and general society on the whole. Furthermore, she is also an incredible inspiration to young women, and not just in Ireland, but across the world, proving that if you want something enough and work hard enough, you will achieve it. We discussed this and much, much more in our interview, so make sure you stay tuned. Hello listeners, and welcome back to our second Women's Six Nations special in conjunction with the 52 blog and K2. Having looked at England in the first episode, our attention now turns to Ireland, and specifically their front row sensation and K2 athlete Leah Lyons. So first of all, welcome to the show, Leah, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you, no worries.
So we're speaking to you in the first rest period of this year's Six Nations, with Ireland sitting fourth in the table after one win and one loss. However, you're just 2 points behind Italy, who are in second, so it's all very much still to play for with three games to go. From your perspective, how has the tournament gone so far?
I think for us at the moment, obviously our first game was very disappointing for ourselves against England. They put quite a good score onto us, and we didn't play very well, so that was quite disappointing. For our second match, we had Scotland, and we really showed up for Scotland, and I think we were quite sore after the first game, and we really wanted to prove a point and put a good score against Scotland, and we did that. We got our bonus point, which we were aiming out to do, and you know, obviously it wasn't the best day to play rugby, but I think we did quite well with the conditions, and we got a good score at the end of it. Yeah.
And you say there that the conditions weren't the best. I don't know if it was like a forward dominated game, and you yourself had a pretty amazing match, so it must have gone pretty well from your perspective.
Yeah, I suppose we hit our line out, and we made dominant scrum, so I think for our set piece side of things we did very, very well, but that's what we try and aim to do for each game. And I suppose we were used quite a lot during and around the game, because of the conditions. You know, it was easier to kind of hit it up than to swing it out wide to the backs, and they used us very well in that match for ourselves.
And you mentioned the conditions there. Obviously it could have been a lot worse, a lot more muddy, a lot more stickier if it was on a proper pitch, but this was on a 3G pitch. They often come under criticism from sort of pundits and fans of the game, but as players yourself, is that something you particularly think about, or is it just something you get on with?
It's something you get on with. Like, Scotland at the weekend was an absolutely amazing pitch to play on. And I suppose, you know, it all depends on where countries have pitches and stuff like that. But I suppose at the end of the day, if it's grass or if it's 4G, you know, if it's 4G, you're not getting mucky. You know, it would be a fast game. It's usually a fast game, and it always is because of the ground, and you're not being dragged down by the mud. If it's grass, you play a different game. I think you have a different way of going around this because it is quite harder underground.
Is there a particular preference for yourself at all, or do you just enjoy playing the game on whatever surface?
I'm quite happy playing on whatever they want to put us on, you know.
Fair enough. You mentioned there, obviously, the first game against England didn't go your way, but however, there was something to smile about in that your Irish crowd set a Six Nations standalone record for attendance, which has since been beaten, but only just. I guess, what was that like playing in front of more than 4,500 fans all cheering you on?
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, with that game, the Irish, you put so much effort into getting people up into that game. Like, the time was quite hard for people to get out of work, but they did really, really good effort at getting young kids up watching, and a lot of schools in as well. So that was quite nice to see. We're hoping again to beat the record that we just lost out to the English game in Doncaster. So we're looking to beat that again in the Scottish, or in the French game that we have coming up.
And how much of a boost, I guess, does playing in front of so many fans give you as a player and as the team?
It's class. I think, like, we can hear them, we can feel them. Do you know, it's nice to be surrounded by young fans, old fans, you know, family, friends. Do you know, it's always a great boost, and it does give you that good feeling while you're playing and stuff. So, yeah, I really enjoy it. I think everybody does.
And I remember seeing at the time a lot of photos going up after the game of you taking the time to have photos with fans and sign autographs and chat to them. Is that something that you as a team find really important to engage these people?
Yeah, definitely. We take our time. We want to go around. We want to try and see as many people as we can. And, you know, obviously we have friends and family, which we see every time, but it's nice to always see a new face or a young girl coming up, or a mother being like, my daughter's joined rugby because of me, or, you know, they've started doing sport or whatever it is. It's always a positive to see. It's always nice to see. It's kind of something of the game that makes it feel a lot more, you know, you're doing something for someone else.
And that record crowd came less than 2 years after Ireland hosted the Women's World Cup back in 2017. How much of an impact did that tournament have on the profile of the sport in the country?
It had a lot. It was like being a part of it, I suppose you're in such a bubble at the time. But once you kind of come outside that after the end of it, or kind of in between it, you see how much effort people have put into publicising it to get people to the matches. Like, they sold out in the final in Belfast, and I think a lot of the games in Dublin were also sold out. You know, that's massive to see. Like, that's people coming to support, whether obviously from foreign countries and stuff, but I think from our own crowd and getting young girls playing rugby, it's massive. They were able to see it at a home venue. They were able to come in and see all these amazing players come play rugby. You know, not even ourselves, but girls from around the world, which you don't really get a chance any other time.
And for you as a player yourself, what was it like, you know, one of your first ever major events, playing in front of a whole tournament in front of a home crowd?
It was absolutely mental. Like, I loved the experience from start to finish. You know, obviously we didn't get a great placing, but I think very special event to be involved in, and I think I was very lucky to be involved in that tournament. And like, I learned so much, I saw so much. You know, even though it was a home tournament, it was absolutely mental. You know, you had so many people there supporting, and different players around the place, you know, that you've looked up to from a young age. You're playing with them, you're in the same environment, you know, it's mental.
And you talked about there playing alongside athletes that you'd grown up watching. What was it like making that transition into the team that had only just a few years before had some incredible moments, such as Grand Slams and beating New Zealand for the first time?
It's a scary moment, but I think it's something that every girl probably in Ireland who plays rugby wants to do. I think that's your main goal. Whether you play at underage at the moment or they're in women's sections, they all you want to do is play for your country. And I suppose at the time for me, you know, I'm surrounded by these absolute superstars that have come off two Six Nations, placed really well in the World Cup, like, beforehand, and and beat New Zealand. Do you know, they were a massive bunch of girls to play with, and I had so much respect for them. And you kind of come into camp and stuff like that, and you're like surrounded by your idols, and it's a really crazy moment, but it's amazing. You know, you learn so much off them at the time as well.
And that must have been a culmination of a long journey for you. I guess from our perspective, a lot of our fans and a lot of our listeners are English. So what was it like being a female rugby player in Ireland growing up, how was it quite tough, or was it very much encouraged?
Well, at the time, I started underage, so I started when I was 7. And at the time, there wouldn't have been girls' underage teams. You would have just had boys' teams. So basically joined in with the boys all the way up to under 13. And, you know, you have to then change over because girls can't play with boys at that age. So my dad made a decision with a few of the other men in the club to set up a girls' team, see if they could get involvement and start up a team. And they did that and played with them for till I came to 18. They started up a women's team in the club probably 2 years before I turned 18. So then I joined them. And then after that, I kind of moved to a Division One club just to get more experience, to get more playing and stuff like that. Because all I wanted to do at the time was play rugby. Still am now. And I suppose you kind of climb up the ladder as it is. And like, it's a tough, long way up. Like, you have to put in the effort to get anything out of it. And a couple of years then, got invited into the Munster women's team and stuff like that. So played a couple of years with them, and then finally got asked up to Irish training camp, and there ever since now at the moment.
And you mentioned there, I think your dad helped set up sort of the first girls section. I guess your dad must have been very, very supportive then of you playing rugby.
Yeah, massively. He's probably like one of my number one supporters. I think at that age, he'd literally drive me to a tournament or drive me to a match at weekends. And like, sometimes if there wasn't enough players from our team, I'd literally just get him to ring up a team and be like, can I play with them? I just wanted to play. I didn't care who I played with. And he'd literally drive me around the place just to get me playing. So yeah, massive support. Like, you couldn't ask anything more from your parents that way.
And I bet he likes to take the credit when you've had a fantastic game like you had at the weekend. I bet he's down with his mates telling them that it's all down to him.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
And we go back to that World Cup and the one that you hosted in Ireland. And you said it wasn't the placing you wanted, but there was a little bit of history, I believe, in your first game against Australia. I think it was the first time you'd beaten them in your history. And I guess, you know, what was it like to beat such a nation like that?
Yeah, I suppose, like, we very rarely get to play against teams from the Southern Hemisphere, obviously the Six Nations, like, each year. So we always get to play against the usual teams, but definitely to play against Australia and Japan, it was massive. It's pretty cool to play against other teams, which very little to know about, and obviously a massive win for us that day. It was amazing, and you know, first match of the World Cup too, to get a win in that really, really was special. It kind of, I think, helped us along slowly for the start of the tournament, you know.
Yeah, certainly. You've had such a fantastic career so far, but one thing I've really noticed about you is that you're able to play both as a prop and as a hooker, which is something that's not seen much in rugby from what I'm aware of. Is that quite a difference in between the two positions? Do you have to train quite differently for the two, or is it, apart from the obvious things like the throwing and the hooking, is it fairly similar?
I think that both parts like have their own little skill sets that you need to understand and evolve. But I think for myself, I'm kind of like, if someone wants to teach me, I'm going to learn it. I think I was like, always find the skill set of rugby quite interesting. So for me, I'll practice throwing, kicking, passing, whatever it is. And like, I'm like, if I can utilise that and put that onto a pitch, I'm quite happy doing so. But I think moving over from either or isn't too bad. It takes a bit of time to go from one to the other and try and figure out what you're doing. But I really enjoy moving across the front row.
And you mentioned kicking there. I seem to have found a couple of videos of you goal kicking when I was researching for this interview. Is that something we can expect to see more of in an Irish shirt in the future?
Oh, I don't know about an Irish shirt, but we might surprise ourselves now so often.
And I want to take you back to an incident that you've talked about previously in last year's Six Nations tournament when you were effectively body shamed. And you really caused quite a stir with your really classy reaction on social media. I guess when you came up with that reaction and shared that story, did you anticipate the amount of attention and love you would receive from it?
No, I didn't really expect anything from it. I put it off obviously as just, you know, I wanted to make an awareness of it. And I think sometimes we don't do it enough. I think we just kind of leave it off. But I was like, it was the one day where I was just like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to see how it goes, you know. And, like, I remember being in work the next day and my phone was just hopping. So, like, I had to turn it off because I was coaching rugby. And I literally turned it back on and there was messages from people everywhere. It was nuts. And, like, people were so nice about it. And, like, I'd never expect anything that happened out of it and stuff. It was nuts.
And when you were, so I believe that it was actually your family told what had been said to you. What was your sort of initial reaction when you first heard what had been said?
Well, I suppose, like, with myself and my family, like, we're such close, like, we're very, very close. And, like, coming back in the car, you know, we literally go through the match, they nearly, like, whoever's in the passenger seat would rewatch it and just kind of go through stuff. And I suppose my reaction was, you know, you're disappointed, like, you know, but I suppose at the time that was the least of my worries. You know, there I was, you know, pretty buzzing that we won the game and we had a good game against Wales. And it was kind of once you kind of come home and you relax and you take the time to kind of reflect on everything, that's when it kind of hit me, like, this isn't the right thing. You know, this shouldn't have happened. You know, I'm out there, all I want to do is play rugby. Like, you know, I've nothing else that I want to do. I just want to play rugby. And those comments are needed, especially when people are surrounded by younger kids who are, as I say, all shapes and sizes. They don't need to be hearing that, you know. We want them to be playing sport. We want them to be having fun outside, running around, being fit and healthy and getting there. It's like, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. So it's, you know, it takes time to get to a comfortable place and to understand your body and how to use it efficiently, you know?
Yeah, of course. And you mentioned there just giving kids the opportunity to run around and play the sport, and your social media shows that you're clearly a big advocate of the 20 by 20 in the Can't See, Can't Be campaign. How much of that, how much of an impact is that having on young women and girls in Ireland?
It's massive. Like, that campaign has done a lot, you know, that they're advertising women's sport, they're advertising sport in general. And I think, you know, younger generations now are massively on social media, massively on phones, and, you know, for them to see us perform and play and like, and know that there's women's teams, whether it's in soccer, football, rugby, hockey, everything, it gives us a platform to engage with them. And, like, all we want is get more girls playing rugby, get more girls playing any sport that is out there. And definitely, I think those campaigns can always lift up and help sport always, increase.
And how much of a societal shift has there been in the attitudes towards women playing sport in Ireland over the last 4 years? Is it, it's like in England over here, it's become a lot more acceptable and there are a lot more people advocating it. Is it very similar then in Ireland, the shift?
I think so. I think sport is growing. I think the interest from people is growing in women's sport. And, you know, all we can do now is support that and help it grow even more, because all it will do will benefit teams all around the country and across the world. You know, everybody gets to see everyone and to put everyone on the same platform, you know, or close enough to the men. I think that's a massive step forward.
And one of those ways in terms of moving towards being equal with men in certain ways is the growing professionalism of some sports. And we're starting to see that in 15-a-side rugby now, with England, New Zealand and France going professional in some way at some point over the last few years. Is that something maybe Ireland are going to be moving towards in the next few years, or is that still a little bit of a bridge too far yet?
I don't know. I think that's obviously to do with the unions. We've no control over that. Obviously, we'd love to see it, and to see other countries take that step forward, it's positive, I think, for people and clubs around the world. You know, they get to see that, you know, people can do this. There is interest there, and there is a possibility of doing it. But it's whether that all comes together and it can be done is another side of it. But I'd be massively positive that, you know, hopefully in the next couple of years, you know, it will be done in some sort of a way, definitely.
Is there a slight worry, though, do you feel, that potentially these teams that have already gone full-time could pull away and create quite a big gap between themselves and the rest of the field? Or is that something you feel that actually you have the quality to bridge anyway?
I think obviously it's a possibility. You know, when you're training in and out each day with each other, you know, you are given an advantage. But I think, like, it kind of makes us as the other side of it. We have to train harder. We have to put a lot of effort in to get up to those standards and, you know, put in those performances against these teams, because, you know, we mightn't have as much time with them, but there definitely is quality there to make performances and to get the right results when needed.
And how much has coming over to playing in the Tyrrells 15s with Harlequins this season had an impact on you? I mean, from what I've seen, it's you've been very welcomed into the club and you've been a mainstay in the team. How much has that helped you grow your game?
Yeah, the club have been absolutely massive. Like, they've been so helpful, so encouraging for me to come over and to have a go. It's kind of, it was quite a quick move to come over for myself, but like I love it. I absolutely love it. I'm learning so much at the moment, and like for myself, my game, I know I'm improving each time, and I'm learning again. And you know, I'm surrounded by such great players and great coaches. It's benefited me so much.
And what is it like then facing up against your clubmates on the Six Nations stage? I saw a funny Twitter post from you about Leanne Riley trying to chase you down. Is it quite a good camaraderie between yourselves on the pitch as well as off it?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, you'll have your bit of banter on the pitch, which is allowed, I think, and, you know, you play professionally as you go on, but, you know, you can have a little comment here and there, and, you know, it's kind of, it's quite nice playing against someone you know, do you know, that kind of way. It's like, you know the ins and outs of them, and it's trying to do a one-up on them if you can, like, you know, try and beat them, whether it's to a run or to something like that. You know, you're playing against your teammates, but at the end of the day, you're friends, you know?
And two days ago as we speak, Harlequins announced their video for their big game changer day, which looks amazing, and it's going to try and break the record for the club attendance in women's rugby. How exciting is it for you to potentially be a part of that in next month?
Massive. They put so much effort into advertising it and to get people to it. I think it's going to be a massive event. I really do think they could beat the record by quite a bit. There's so much effort being put in behind the scenes, which we barely know about, but like, it's massive, and it's the way they advertise it as well. You know, Quinns have been a massive advocate for equal rugby, so it's like they want to make the women as equal as the men there, and you know, giving us a big game or a game changer. You know, it's like having the boys' big game over Christmas. You know, but yeah, really excited, looking forward to it. Hopefully, we'll get selected for that. It'll be a nice game to compete in.
But before then, though, to round the interview off, you have still got 3 Six Nations games left against Wales, France and Italy. What are you and the team hoping for from those games?
We'll be looking, I think at the moment, we'll be looking for hopefully 3 wins. That's our aim at the moment, just to have this weekend. We're back in camp now tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday. And then we head over to Italy. We'll be looking to get a win against them. And, you know, they've performed really well at the moment in their first 2 games. So we'll be looking to hopefully stop their thunder at the moment and get a win, break again, and we go straight into France. And that's going to be a tough game, I think. You know, they didn't have the best performance against England. They did a great performance against Wales. So I think that they'll be looking to redeem themselves a lot as well. But we'll be hoping to put up a fight and get a good score against them, I think, and then obviously we finish with Wales in Cardiff and that's always a good game. Wales are always a decent squad when they're home, so we'll be looking to also get a win against them, but I think we have to perform the next two matches and kind of start with Italy and then go on to France, Wales, and see how we go.
And I think that's the perfect way to round off the interview, and I know I will certainly be rooting for you, and I hope all our listeners will be as well. Thank you for being such a fantastic guest, and we really do wish you all the best for the rest of the tournament and your career going forwards.
Thank you.